This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to the Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
One of the biggest movies at the box office, and it's been highly anticipated by film buffs as well, is called Ad Astra. It's a space epic about an astronaut played by Brad Pitt who goes on a mission into space to stop a cataclysm that could threaten life on Earth. It's the kind of big-budget sci-fi adventure you'd more expect to see from J.J. Abrams or James Cameron. But Ad Astra was created by a director named James Gray, a very different kind of filmmaker. James Gray is known for intimate, small-scale dramas, many set in the outer boroughs of New York City, where he grew up. When Gray announced that his next film would be set in outer space, some of his admirers were a little puzzled, maybe concerned, and among them was Richard Brody, who covers film for NewYorker.com.
The first film of James Gray's that I saw was The Yards, which I saw on VHS tape, but I didn't have a DVD player yet, around 2005, 2006. It's about two young men, played by Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg, who get caught up in a scandal involving organized crime, the MTA, and the Queensboro government.
So where are we going?
We're going to the Sunnyside Yards. The guys will be there, they're waiting for us. And there's someone new I want you to meet that's working with me now.
What are we gonna do down there?
We take out our competitors' trains.
You know, I had heard that he was a kind of hard-nosed realist, maybe in the early Martin Scorsese vein, and I didn't quite agree. James Gray's films look normal. He tells clear, straightforward, chronological stories in which characters' motives are clearly set out. But the undertone is like the magma of a volcano. I often describe them as operatic. It's like actually watching an opera in the sense that the surfaces are extremely stylized and extremely controlled, but the emotional world is eruptive.
Control, I'm seeing a power surge on C-Post. You getting that?
Roger that, Roy.
Control, we got a lot of people up there. Over.
Control, I think we have information. Stand by, we're working the issue.
I first heard about Ad Astra a couple of years ago, and I confess that I worried. I worried about the idea of a filmmaker whose movies were anchored so deeply in material reality, making a movie on a subject of which he has no physical experience. Fortunately, I was absolutely wrong.
Stanley Kubrick once said that trying to direct a movie is like trying to write War and Peace in a bumper car in Coney Island.
I spoke with James Gray last week, just before the opening of Ad Astra.
And I think that when you deal with a certain scale, it only magnifies that problem. You have to find a way to clear out the room for the intimacy, to get a window into the person's soul. And the machinery gets in the way.
In a way, this film is not a two-hander, it's a one-hander. It's very much a one-person alone in outer space film getting very deep into his own psyche.
Yeah, I'm guilty as charged. There's no other really major roles in the film, and obviously that was intended. I had read an article about the planned Mars mission. It said they're going to have four people for 2 years who are going to be in an area which is scarcely that much larger than the room we're in now, and we're in a pretty small room. So I thought, well, that's interesting. Usually when you see space movies with a team, they're always high-fiving each other and everyone's really excited to be there. And I thought, well, no, their perfect astronaut is actually someone who doesn't really want to talk to anyone else.
When I found out that you were making a science fiction film, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. I worried. And the reason I worried is that I said to myself, you know, you've been to Queens.
Well, I haven't just been to Queens. I've sort of set up shop and manufactured a bunch of things in Queens.
Right. You've been that there's something to be said for firsthand experience, any filmmaker's firsthand experience.
I was just trying to be as autobiographical as I could.
Yeah.
Which, may I say, is not the same thing as being personal. They're very different.
How do you see the difference?
I think autobiographical is you're adhering to the facts of your life. Personal means you're doing a kind of emotional deep dive. So, for example, I regard Ad Astra as very personal to me, but obviously I'm not going to Neptune. So it's really about what the film is about, what you're dealing with under the surface, and how you try to connect to the character or to the story. You're trying to get as intimate as possible. The most accurate rendition of your most intimate ideas and feelings and impressions. Almost a form of psychoanalysis, you know?
This is Major Roy McBride. I'm attempting to reach Dr. Clifford McBride. This is Dr. McBride's son. Dad, I'd like to see you again.
Movies like 2001 and Apocalypse Now are obvious points of reference for Ad Astra. And directors like Kubrick and Coppola, along with Scorsese and Cassavetes, loom large in Gray's work. But as someone who grew up in New York going to repertory cinemas, he had an unusually wide and unusually deep exposure to the history of cinema.
I saw Audette when I was like 14. I mean, no one I went to film school with had seen Audette. Audette, Carl Dreyer. What is that? And Day of Wrath. And I'd seen all that stuff. And maybe I didn't get it fully. But that's okay. I had it at least to refer to it, you know?
Did this help you, hinder you in film school?
It hurt me in film school. I'll tell you, it hurt my ego. My ego was way too big. I thought I was fantastic. I thought I was fantastic all through the making of my first film. You know, I got that made. I was only 23 years old. I was incredibly lucky. I was just throwing my crumbs on the water and back were sprouting these incredible, beautiful lilies. I thought, I'm a genius. I can do anything. It's amazing. And March 5th, 1994 happened, Richard Brody.
March 5th, 1994 was the day that James Gray first saw the footage that he had made cut together as a film.
And I walked in. I thought, I'm going to see something great because I'm a genius. And it was the biggest piece of shit I ever saw in my life. And my ego has never recovered. And ever since, I've always felt that I'm trying to salvage what I can from an experience as opposed to moving triumphantly to do the next great movie. That is gone.
In point of fact, Little Odessa is a really terrific movie, and it was very well received. But James Gray was looking at his work in the context of the directors he reveres. And compared to Coppola or Ford or Hitchcock, well, of course his first film didn't measure up. But it did nonetheless feel like it belonged in the same tradition. And actually, when producers have come to him expecting him to make classic-style Hollywood movies, his work has often proved too idiosyncratic, too unusual. For example, his second movie, The Yards. The producers wanted a traditional crime movie with a redemptive ending, but that's not the personal story Gray wanted to tell. The production turned troubled, and as a result, the film was scantily released.
You know, it's very, very hard to keep an even keel because there's a level of public humiliation that goes along with it. You know, your friends, whom you love, remind you of it in the worst way. They'll send you the bad reviews. They'll say to you, well, when's your film coming out? Even though it came out 2 weeks ago, you know. And the experience I've had has been very difficult to get other films made.
I remember when Two Lovers was supposed to come out in Oscar season, and instead it was brought out in February and only in a few theaters. And then, forgive me for saying this, but Joaquin Phoenix, who was a favorite actor of mine, instead of going to promote the film on television, promoted his documentary and his
performance art. Well, I mean, I love Joaquin to death, and I think he's a great, great, great actor, and I love him as a person. But the David Letterman show that he did was to promote Two Lovers, and nobody talked about the film. It was just complete nonsense what he did.
Can you set up the clip for us, Joaquin?
Are you serious? Just the maniacal laughter? I don't know what the clip is.
Don't know what the clip is? It's you and maybe you and a scene with you and Gwyneth Paltrow.
You're doing fine.
Thanks. High praise coming from you.
Is that really? We're
having fun.
Is that? That's
fun? We're having fun. Just relax.
I said to myself, what the hell is he doing? He's killing the film.
And I loved his work in it. I thought he did himself a disservice. I thought he was beautiful in it.
In Two Lovers, James Gray got deeply personal. I can't speculate on whether it has any relation to the specifics of his own life, but the emotional tone of the film is deeply personal. And I think that at that point, in order to make films that were even more personal, he had to move away from his own specific place and time. That's why Ad Astra is such a remarkable achievement. He reaches very deep subjectivity in deep space.
This was a very, very hard movie to do. It took years out of my life. And I don't know what I want to do next. I just don't. I have an inkling. You know, there's a kind of almost autobiographical thing I'm thinking of doing about my high school, my transition years from public school to private. Let's just say Fred Trump was a major figure in my private school life. His son, Mr. Donald Trump. I think that political power, the underpinnings of where we are now, I think I'd like to talk about a little bit.
James Gray may not direct the next Marvel super spectacle, but by going back home, he may be expanding his canvas to the country and the world at large. Leave it to him to put a new spin on a classic idea. The personal is political.
The writer and director, James Gray. His movie Ad Astra, starring Brad Pitt, is in theaters now. And he talked with Richard Brody of The New Yorker.